This is DW News live from Berlin. Ukraine says explosions destroyed Russian jets in Crimea. Russia admits one person was killed but denies its airbase came under attack. Ukraine's president promises to liberate the peninsula annexed by Russia in 2014. Also coming up, a neck-and-neck race in Kenya. The top contenders to be the next president appear evenly matched. A runoff vote may be needed. I'm Rebecca Ritters. Welcome to the program. Ukraine says nine Russian warplanes have been destroyed in explosions at an airbase in the annexed Crimea region. One person was killed and several others injured. Russia has used the Saki base near Novofedorivka to strike southern Ukraine. Moscow says detonations of stored ammunition set off the blasts, not an attack. Ukraine denies bombing the airbase, but a senior official suggests it may have been sabotage. President Volodymyr Zelensky has vowed that Ukraine will liberate the Crimean Peninsula from Russian occupation.
A brilliant blue sky turns dark after several powerful blasts. Images of black smoke at a Russian airbase in the Black Sea were posted on social media by beachgoers in Crimea, a popular holiday destination for many Russians. But these holidaymakers may now want to change their plans. Tourists described how they experienced the detonations. I was standing, and then it felt like either I flew into the air or fell underground. I was so scared. My husband jumped up. He was resting and said, "What happened?" And then we took a few steps back and immediately saw this cloud and a column of smoke right above us. Crimea was used by Russia as one of the launch pads for its invasion of Ukraine. Moscow has had troops stationed on the peninsula since it illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. Many Ukrainians consider this to be the start of Russia's invasion, including Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky.
This Russian war against Ukraine and against all of free Europe began with Crimea and must end with Crimea, with its liberation.
Russia's defense ministry says the explosions were detonations of stored ammunition and not the result of an attack. Ukraine has denied it was responsible for the incident, which took place deep in Russian-occupied territory. But a senior Ukrainian official suggested that the blasts could have been the work of partisan saboteurs or Russian incompetence. So far, Ukraine hasn't reported carrying out any major attacks on Russian targets in Crimea. Officials in Moscow warn that would trigger massive retaliation, including strikes on Kyiv.
Earlier, I spoke to military analyst and conflict researcher Mike Martin and asked him who he thought was behind the explosions.
Oh, almost certainly it was the Ukrainian armed forces. Throughout the war, things have happened that haven't gone Moscow's way. For example, I'm sure your viewers remember the sinking of the Moskva. There were all sorts of stories about how that was being towed, broken down, and then it sank. And of course, what had happened was the Ukrainians had sunk it with a missile. What's happened here is that the Ukrainians have either launched missiles to attack it or have used partisans to get over the fence and do some sabotage. What's very interesting is that the Ukrainian government is saying, did that blow up? That we weren't aware. That was us. And what they're doing there is they're creating confusion and playing the Russians at their own game. It makes it much more difficult to the Russians to respond if the situation is ambiguous.
Mike Martin speaking to us earlier. Russian journalist Marina Ovsyannikova, famous for interrupting a state television news broadcast in protest of the war in Ukraine, is facing criminal charges. Ovsyannikova's lawyer says she's been charged with spreading false information about Russia's armed forces. She appeared in court following police raids on her home.
It was a moment which captured the world's attention. A journalist interrupting a news broadcast at the Russian state TV channel she worked at to protest the war in Ukraine days after the invasion began. Marina Ovsyannikova dramatically defied the Kremlin's narrative of a special military operation. Don't believe the propaganda, they're lying to you, her poster read. Many feared for her in the aftermath. But after being fined, she continued to protest the war despite the Kremlin's increasingly draconian laws aimed at suppressing dissent. Last month, she held a solo anti-war picket directly in front of the Kremlin, holding a poster calling Russian President Vladimir Putin a murderer and Russian soldiers fascists. According to her lawyer, that's what has led to the criminal charges against her, allegedly spreading false information about the Russian armed forces. She was brought to court on Wednesday following a raid on her home. After the raid, Marina was taken here. I'm now waiting for an officer to come down for me to start investigative procedures. According to the early information, she's incriminated with the Article 207(3) of the Criminal Code. That protest has already landed her with a 50,000 ruble fine, around $800. But criminal charges mean much more severe consequences. If convicted, she faces 15 years in jail. But despite full awareness of those risks, she has remained unrepentant, as seen recently at a court appearance in July.
I'm staging pickets and protest as I'm against the war. I'm not going to stay silent. This is my civic position. Let me get through, please.
In a country where the government has been ruthless in its approach to critics, it is a stance which is both dangerous and remarkably brave.
Let's take a look now at some more stories related to the Ukraine war. Russian strikes in the southern Ukrainian region of Zaporizhia have killed at least 13 people and left thousands without electricity. Authorities say dozens of rockets hit residential areas. Kyiv accuses Moscow of using a captured nuclear plant in the region as cover for its artillery. Meanwhile, foreign ministers of the G7 group of nations have called on Moscow to return control of the damaged Ukrainian nuclear station to Kyiv. The plant has been shelled several times, prompting fears of a potential nuclear incident. Moscow and Kyiv blame each other for the attacks. As European countries scramble to find new energy sources to replace Russian oil and gas, some are turning to nuclear power. But storing waste that can remain radioactive for centuries is a big problem. Finland is pioneering a system which it says can permanently contain all its spent nuclear material. And for some communities, it's a welcome financial boost. Our correspondent Terry Schultz went to Western Finland to find out more.
Who wants to live next to a nuclear site? Well, this guy for one, and evidently most of the other some 9,000 residents of the town of Eurajoki, Finland. It's the proud home to three nuclear reactors and, opening soon, the world's first permanent storage site for high-level radioactive waste.
We get their real estate taxes. It's about 20 million per year.
Eurajoki Mayor Vesa Lakinjami says decades of good relations and no accidents with the Olkiluoto nuclear power plant led his community to actively campaign to be chosen also as the location for the Onkalo repository. The facility is being called a game changer in the nuclear power industry because the waste is deposited so deep in the earth it will never have to be moved. Lakinjami considers that a win for his town. Long-term financial security.
We have renovated schools and we are going to build a sports hall here. It's cost about 8 million euros.
The economic boost from the nuclear industry is welcome, but embracing its waste requires deep trust in expertise and authority, part of the bedrock of Finnish society. Thanks to that and the unique suitability of the actual Finnish bedrock, this country is making history half a kilometer below ground.
Welcome to Onkalo.
When the site becomes operational within the next couple of years, the spent nuclear fuel will be transferred into steel canisters and then copper capsules, lowered into tunnels, and sealed off forever. At the moment, the Onkalo site is still in its trial phase as experts continue finalizing the details of permanently disposing of spent nuclear fuel. With such high-level radioactive waste, there's no room for missteps.
Looked good.
Geologist Johanna Hansen says every precaution is being taken.
To ensure that also in the far future that there are no any pathways into the surface. So this facility will store the canisters for 100,000 of years.
Though the project has been underway underground for almost two decades, it's getting new interest from abroad. That's due in part to the European Parliament's designation of nuclear power as a green fuel and the push in Europe to reduce dependence on Russia as an energy supplier as it wages war on Ukraine. So Onkolo is getting lots of attention these days, and not only from scientists and journalists. 17,000 people per year come to see this interactive visitor center and take a tour of the facility. Pasi Tuohima heads up communications for Posiva, the company responsible for Onkolo. He says his goal is to demystify the process of nuclear power generation.
A lot of people say that, okay, nuclear is good, but then you have this waste of used nuclear fuel. But what we are saying is that, no, that's not true. We do have the solution for that, and it's completely safe.
Tuohima says he expects more European countries to follow Finland's lead now that they're forced to reconsider how to power their futures.
And to Kenya now, where a runoff vote may be needed after early election results show a tight race between the two main contenders to be the next president. The veteran opposition leader Raila Odinga and the deputy president William Ruto appear evenly matched. The result is expected later in the week.
These ballot boxes will seal Kenya's fate for the next 5 years. After hours of voting, described as peaceful, Kenyans are now waiting to hear who will next lead their country.
I'm seeing everything is going on well, and we want just peace to prevail.
Some Kenyans say they have little hope in politicians after years in which successive governments failed to meet the country's economic needs. Disapproval saw voter turnout plunge compared to previous years, especially among Kenya's younger voters. But observers say they can only do so much.
I cannot ramble about turnout. You cannot push the CTS to come. That's your pastime now, not mine. Mine is they've been allowed to vote. Nobody was restricted, prevented from voting. The process was calm, peaceful, orderly. So if somebody has chosen not to exercise his or her right to elect their leader, well.
Kenyans have returned to daily life while awaiting the results. For many, memories of violent disputes over election results are not too distant. Observers hope a quick count will ease any anxieties.
For now, people have gotten used to such panic. Unlike in the previous years, business is going on as usual. As you can see, there are quite a number of people going on with their business because one thing that we need to know is that these politicians are friends, and the common people, as we talk now, cannot in any way try to harm his or her colleague.
For the first time in Kenya's history, opposing candidates have vowed to accept the results without dispute. As the results near, Kenyans hope the promise will hold.
DW correspondent Edith Kamani told us that many Kenyans are struggling to afford basic necessities and that that is a major factor in voter apathy.
Well, if I was to summarize it into one word, it would be money. A lot of people here in Kenya are simply grappling with just how to survive on a regular basis. There was a viral video that went out about a month ago of a lady who went to the supermarket, and upon realizing that the price of maize flour, which is a staple here in Kenya, was $2, up from $1.20, she just started screaming and almost sort of lost her mind, one might describe. And this is sort of what is on the mind of most Kenyans. Every day I have people asking me for money, asking me for jobs, and this is not unique to me personally. This is just the state of affairs in the country, and this is what is on the minds of people. And so an election doesn't seem so important.
DW's Edith Kamani talking to us a little earlier. Well, that's all from us for now. Coming up after a short break, a DW documentary looks at the battle for control of water as climate change causes serious droughts. I'm Rebecca Ritters in Berlin. Brent Goff will be bringing you the news headlines next hour. Thanks very much for watching.